It's my pleasure to talk to you today about consistency benchmarking. So this is work coming out of HP Labs. We were hoping that my intern, Muntasir, would be here to present this work, but he had a qualifying exam, and so he wasn't able to join us. The other collaborators are Alvin, Kim, and Jay. So the class of storage systems that we consider in this work is very different from those that Nicolas just told us about, and these are eventually consistent key-value storage systems. So first, let me tell you or remind you what those are. So in these systems, there are no transactions. You only get and put operations, and your consistency is very weak, so you don't have serializability. OK, so these systems provide fault tolerance by replicating the key-value pairs, which are the states. So here we have an example with one key, and the initial value of that key is 0. So we have 3 replicas. Now what happens, how do you update this state? Well, a client application may try to execute a put operation, which I'm just going to call a write here. So to write 1 to x, you send some kind of a request to all 3 replicas, and you tell them to change the value for x. But because the system is weakly consistent, you don't wait for all 3 replicas to perform the state change and acknowledge. Maybe you only wait for 1 replica to update itself and send you a response. And these other 2 replicas may have queued up your request because they're more busy, and eventually they're going to execute it. So now the replicas diverge, but the write is considered complete. And another client comes along, which is a reader, and it may execute the read operation by fetching the value from just one of these replicas, maybe chosen uniformly at random. And so what we see here is even though 1 is the latest value, the client actually fetches a 0, which we will think of as a stale read. And indeed, in this whole talk, consistency, rather inconsistency, means staleness. OK, so that's eventual consistency. Eventually, some mechanism ensures that these 2 replicas are brought up to date. It could be some kind of asynchronous replication protocol, or it could be that the requests queued up at these servers are eventually executed when they become less busy. So a number of systems follow this design. Perhaps Dynamo was the first one. This is Amazon's key value store. People have tried to describe the behaviors of the system, and Werner Vogels from Amazon used the following definition. He says, if no updates are applied to an object here refers to a key value pair, then eventually all the accesses, which are the read operations, will return the latest updated value. So this is a fine behavioral definition, but it leaves open 2 questions. Number 1, how soon is eventual? So he doesn't tell us exactly when this happens after the updates stop arriving. And he also doesn't tell us what happens to a system if updates are made continuously. So if there is no point in time after which no more updates occur. So in this work, we try to answer this question a little bit more broadly by quantifying the actual consistency that's observed by the clients accessing the system of an eventually consistent key value storage system for arbitrary workloads, and not only those ones where eventually there are no updates. Okay, and as I mentioned here, inconsistency will be synonymous with staleness that I'm going to define more precisely in just a few short minutes. Okay, so there is related work in this area. People have tried to answer this question, maybe a slightly broader version of it. And here are 3 representative works. YCSB++ is an extension to the Yahoo Cloud Serving benchmark with a consistency measurement. The other 2 papers use similar techniques to evaluate the consistency of commercial key-value storage systems. So all 3 works use more or less the same methodology, which I'm going to illustrate very soon. But first, let me just point out that in the community, people draw a distinction between 2 types of consistency. There is the so-called data-centric consistency that talks about replicas not agreeing on a value. That's in the back end. It refers to the data. And there's the client-centric consistency that tells you what the client is actually observing by way of read operations that return state from here. The prior work was interested in the sort of client-centric consistency, but here's the methodology that they used. OK, so they run this key-value storage system as a black box. One client will perform a write on some key. And then another client will come along and will try to read that same key back-to-back repeatedly in rapid succession until it reads the value that was written. So if it reads a stale value, then it reads again and again until it sees what it should be seeing. And somehow time is measured from when this happens until this, and this is used as some notion of staleness. So on the one hand, this is reading what or measuring what the client is seeing. On the other hand, it's sort of also measuring how long this replication protocol at the back end is taking to push this value out to the other replicas. So I'd like to draw on an old adage to help explain what is going on there and maybe what should be going on. So if a tree falls in the forest and nobody's around to see it, does it really make a noise? So the moral equivalent of that in this context would be if your replicas don't agree, so there's inconsistency at the back end, but no client actually reads a stale value, then was that value really stale, or is there an inconsistency? So I would argue that if your goal is to measure the client-centric consistency, then the answer should be no, right? If the replicas don't agree, but nobody is able to observe that, then we don't count that as a consistency violation. OK, so that's the problem or a disadvantage of the prior work, which artificially injects read operations into the workload. So that's a little bit like sending people into the forest by the busload and asking them to listen to the sound of trees falling. So it's a type of observer effect. The more people you have, the more likely they are to hear the noise. So our methodology is different. And let me describe to you what that is. We use what we call passive measurement. So again, we have a black box key value storage system. We feed it a workload and then some configuration parameters. Maybe in future work, a failure pattern. We execute it and collect a trace of operations that tell us the start and end time of every read and write. And then from that trace, we compute or calculate the staleness passively. And we obtain numbers. And from those numbers, we can generate visualizations. OK, so how do we do this calculation and what is staleness exactly? Well, so here's the definition. First of all, we consider that the values in the system are fresh from the moment they are written until they are overwritten. So we are only interested in staleness introduced by the system itself. And the staleness is how long ago was a value that was read last considered fresh. If it's currently fresh, so that's a staleness of 0, whereas if you read a stale value, then it could be positive. OK, so this is what we're trying to calculate. How do we do it? So also, I want to point out that we are not dealing with causally consistent systems or anything like that. These are just plain old eventually consistent key value stores. And we just want to calculate staleness for them. So how do we do it? We use a theoretical tool from a prior publication from HP Labs, which is called delta atomicity. It's a way of quantifying to what extent the execution diverges from the sort of gold standard, which, depending on your community, might be called atomicity, linearizability, or strict serializability. So here we have an example, 4 operations on one key, a write of 1, a write of 2, a read that returns 1, which is stale because 1 was overwritten by 2, and then a read of 2, which is fresh. And we say that the staleness is the distance of this gap from when that write ended until that read began, because we consider that 1 was fresh up to somewhere here, whereas it was also read here. Okay, but from this specific example, we can generalize this definition to arbitrary history. So we call this, we quantify this using a score function, and in fact, we compute scores for different pairs of values. So here it's an inconsistency due to the interaction of operations that read and wrote 1 versus those that read and wrote 2, and so on. So we get a bunch of these score function values, and then we can take a maximum over all possible pairs of values, and then we get something called delta, which tells us the sort of worst case staleness observed by reads on a given key. And for different keys, we can compute different deltas. OK, so that's the methodology. This is prior work, but we are applying it in a new way for the purpose of consistency benchmarking. OK, so let me show you some experimental results that we've obtained using this methodology. First of all, so how did we obtain these numbers? We used an extension of YCSB against Cassandra. So this is plain old Cassandra, and plain old YCSB modified with the collection of the trace I described earlier, which is where, at the client, we record the start and end time of every read and write. Okay, so we did an experiment using 10 modern servers equipped with multi-core processors and lots of DRAM and SSDs. Each server ran one Cassandra node and one YCSB client. The particular workload was an 80% read, 20% write workload, and the keys were drawn from the YCSB hotspot distribution. So the hotspot distribution works like this. We have a key space of 1 million keys. There's a 20% partition, which is called the hot set, where 80% of the workload is directed. So this small subset of keys is hammered with the majority of the workload. And then we have the cold set consisting of the remaining 80% of the keys. And this is a skewed distribution that's representative of flash crowds and so on. OK, so we executed Cassandra with this particular workload. This was actually a failure-free execution. And we collected this trace of operations. And we computed for different keys our score function values. And then we plotted them. And this is what we got. OK, so let me explain what this graph is showing. So I defined before very quickly the score function, which tells us that there was an inconsistency, and it tells us how bad it was, how much staleness was observed in the read of some value. OK, so these are the score function values for all the keys, for all the possible pairs of values. We notice that over an experiment with over 1 million operations, in particular about 320,000 writes and over 1 million reads, we only observe 255 positive score function values, which tells you that at most 255 keys were involved in stale reads as an upper bound, right? So a very small fraction of the operations and keys are actually suffering from inconsistencies. And moreover, when we plot the positive score function values, what we notice is that most of them are actually very small in the single digit milliseconds. So the staleness is very, very, very small. Okay, another visualization that produced is a time series plot of the score function values. So this one maybe will take a little bit more explanation. So remember that the score function, when it's positive, tells you that there was an inconsistency due to not necessarily one operation, but the interaction of different operations. So what we did in this plot is we assigned a time within the execution to each positive score function value. Okay, so each point here tells you what was the value of the score function and roughly when did the corresponding inconsistency occur. Okay, and once again, this is only showing the positive score function values. And once again, only a very small fraction of operations and keys are involved in inconsistencies. And this graph shows a very interesting pattern, which is that, first of all, when you do have inconsistencies, many of them are near this x-axis, which means that the score function value is small, and therefore the staleness is very small. And the other thing we observe is that these occur in these interesting clumps. And we are in the process of trying to find out what exactly is causing this phenomenon. Okay, so these are the two types of visualizations that we've collected so far. And now, to conclude, let me tell you what is the next step and what we've been working on. So first, to summarize, what is the result? This is a new methodology for the passive benchmarking of consistency. So passive means we calculate consistency or staleness from a trace obtained using some minimally disruptive technique rather than injecting operations artificially into the workload. And we do this for eventually consistent key value stores. And we claim that this captures faithfully, at least relative to the prior work, the actual consistency observed by the clients which are accessing the system. OK, so ongoing and future work. So of course, we would like to collect additional numbers in order to understand more broadly the behavior of these EC systems in practice. And we would like to do this across different workloads, different configuration parameters, in particular varying the replication factor, and so on. And as well, we would like to play around with failure injection to see whether we can visualize nicely the effect of failures on the observed consistency. So that's the basic science question. And here are a couple of engineering questions that we'd like to answer is, first of all, how do we define consistency-based service level agreements, which would allow key value stores to provide well-defined consistency guarantees, and how do we enforce these? And the second point, consistency amplification, is the technique of slowing down or delaying reads in order to improve the client-centric consistency. So thank you very much. And if you'd like more information, please feel free to get in touch with us. Right, so yes, but that's not presented in this paper or in this presentation. So if I understood correctly, what you're asking is the sensitivity of this metric that we're calculating to how close the reads and writes on the same key are in the workload. And one way to measure this is to vary the size of the key set. The fewer keys you have, the more likely it is that operations that are close in time also operate on the same key, right? So in this experiment, we had 1 million keys. And we actually purposely skewed the workload to be able to observe inconsistencies. If we had a uniform workload across a million keys, the situation you described, write and then a read of the same key, is very unlikely. Right? So that's one of the goals of future work. And from the sort of preliminary experiments, it seems that we are able to demonstrate this relationship. That the staleness becomes higher as the likelihood of repeated accesses on the same key increases.
Right. I guess the question is with regard to SLAs as well. Right. The SLA is going to depend on my workload as a client. If my workload is rewrite the same key a lot, you're going to have a tough time giving me any kind of strong guarantees. Whereas if mine is read random chip, then it's going to be really easy for you to provide a guarantee. So I guess the benchmarking aspect of this, I guess, is tied to the workload a little bit.
Yes. The metric is it's very sensitive to certain aspects of the workload. Marcos?
Related to the question of the metric, so you have these metrics in the visualization, but you have some guidelines of how a developer that is considering various different storage systems or eventual system would use to look at your metrics and determine whether that particular storage system is useful for them and appropriate for them. Because it seems to be missing a level of abstraction, it seems to be fairly low level. How would somebody actually use the information?
Yeah, so that's a great question. So that's it's also an open question. So a quick answer to that would be, let's fix a specific use case. Maybe I post something on Facebook and I tell my friend, go look at my post, and then they go look at it and maybe they see my post, or maybe they see a stale value, which is the state of my timeline from before I made that post. So in that kind of interaction, being able to compute what kind of delta or what kind of staleness we can expect might guide the application developer by letting them know, okay, I have to wait an extra 100 milliseconds before my friend has to wait 100 milliseconds before reading my post in order to make sure or to increase the likelihood that he will see the latest value, right? So in these kinds of simple cases, I think it's somewhat clear what you could do with this information. But in the broader sense, I think the question is still open.
But in this case, your friend is going to see the composite of many different actions by the storage system as opposed to just a single operation, right? So how does that single operation's semantics or guarantees translate to the end user behavior? In this case, Facebook user behavior, this example, isn't very clear.
Yeah, so that's a question that we don't answer in this work. We're laying down the foundations for the methodology, and in ongoing work, we're happy to expand to these other questions and think more closely about the use cases. Okay, there were two more questions, one from here and one from there. Okay, let's start here maybe. So you're asking whether the spikes are caused by the benchmark? Right, so we don't know. I would speculate that the answer is no. I would conjecture that this is due to the storage system, but we have not had the time to actually test that hypothesis. So the YCSB, despite the fact that you know, we have a skewed workload, the YCSB is making a lot of decisions uniformly at random, right? Or maybe not uniformly, but with some kind of Bernoulli distribution, right? So the way the YCSB is generating this, you know, flipping a coin, choosing between a read and write, or flipping a coin, choosing between a key in the hot set or in a cold set, doesn't really explain this kind of clustering. Sure. It could have to do with the quality of the random number generator, but I think there are much more interesting things happening inside Cassandra that might explain this. Okay.
Yeah, I was just going to say that this work is good to think about eventual consistency, you know, what likelihood you have to see stale data. It'd be interesting to see what you add failures into what happens. But in terms of just consistency in general,
it's targeted at eventually consistent storage systems, right? So I mentioned we don't provide a way to measure to what extent a causally consistent system might deviate from its specification, right? That's not part of the question. This is more the distance between sort of linearizability, atomicity, and what you're actually getting. Does that answer your question? So when you inject failures, what we expect is that maybe these spikes are much taller and much broader, right? And this could be a nice way of visualizing what is actually happening during these failures. After a failure is restored, a partition is restored, how long does it take until, once again, we start seeing mostly reads of fresh values? And even when you do have these spikes, notice that most of these inconsistencies are sort of in the tens of milliseconds. So if you were to, say, delay your reads by 10 milliseconds, you might get rid of a lot of inconsistencies. And one application of this measurement of staleness is that it tells you exactly how much you should delay your reads in order to get atomic behavior, right? And this is the first methodology that mathematically answers that question. Right, and I believe I can prove formally that you can make these chi's and deltas arbitrarily large by making the partition long enough. So there's no bound on these. If you were able to bound this, then that would contradict Brewer's cap principle. So we know in the worst case these can grow without bounding.